Welcome back to Unboxed. Today, Dr. Davis and I will discuss the importance for leaders to understand the relationship system of the workplace. We're ready to dive in. We're excited that you're here. So stick around as we unbox the power and the potential of your leadership.
I'm Dr. Robert Davis, family life educator and leadership coach. This is my co-host, R.P. Soriano. Soriano attended John Hopkins Carey Business School, worked in the financial industry, and was an international consultant before partnering with me to launch Unboxed to Lead. Me? Well, I worked for over 20 years as a senior pastor and a community organizer. Then I retired and started a leaders peer support community called Unboxed to Lead. Soriano and I have been friends since the early 90s, and with our varied experiences and expertise, we help leaders reach the next level in their leadership. So join us for the next few moments as we unbox the power and the potential of your relationships, your leadership, and your life.
Welcome back, everyone, to another Unboxed broadcast. R.P. Soriano here with Dr. Davis, and unfortunately today, I can't see your beautiful face.
Oh, man, you've got me over here blushing. I'm in Poughkeepsie, New York, and, I have very poor internet reception, and so they're going to have to hear us. We're going to torture them with our voices. As my mother told me when I was young, son, you've got a face for radio.
And I'm sure the proud infrastructure or people responsible for infrastructure in Poughkeepsie or where are you?
Poughkeepsie, New York.
Visiting Poughkeepsie, New York will not be happy to hear that you're putting down their internet service. At any rate, well, welcome back, everyone. We're here today, like I said, with Dr. Davis. We've got an exciting topic to discuss. We are pure audio today, so that takes that's a little different for me. I'm used to playing off of Dr. Davis's facial expressions to know when I'm doing well and when I'm not. At any rate, let's take care of a couple of housekeeping things before we dive into our subject. We want to remind everyone to like, share, and subscribe the broadcast, and also to be sure to follow us on our social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, and especially LinkedIn. If you follow our LinkedIn page, you'll get all kinds of updates about the things that we're doing, particularly around all of the webinars that we offer. And you can also log on to our website or visit our website at www.unboxtolead.com and sign up for our newsletter. Well, you'll get, like I said, you'll get updates in your inbox about upcoming webinars and other things that we're doing so that you are constantly in the know about what we've got going on. And you can also listen to some past episodes there, webinars and podcasts, and listen to some of the episodes. We've had some really exciting guests in the past. And, you can catch up on anything you may have missed. So at any rate, our topic today, Dr. Davis, is understanding the relationship system of the workplace. Now, I guess clinically speaking, we use this term system, relationship system, family systems. Can you kind of give us an overview or give us a better understanding of what we mean by these terms? And then we can just kind of dive into what we mean by the workplace relationship system.
Yeah. So, of course, when we think about a system, we think about, the Big Ben clock. We think about an engine. We just got a lot of different components that come together to make something function. That's very much simple. And so the way that works is whenever two or more people come together in relationship with each other, they form a relationship system. I mean, it's just as natural as natural can be. So that's what we mean when we talk about a relationship system. It's just two or more people coming together and having relationship with one another, whether that is a church relationship system, whether it is a at school with educational relationship system, the workplace, or of course, the biological family.
That's very interesting. You gave a very clear definition of how or what goes into making a system. And immediately I thought, well, if the parts aren't working, then the system doesn't work. I can imagine if the parts of the clock tower in London, Big Ben, that you mentioned, if the gears are all rusty or something's not working, then the bells don't toll, the hands don't move. Go ahead.
Oh, so that's exactly it. I mean, you really hit the nail on the head. And so that's why it's so important for the leadership, for the leader to make sure that they are functioning at high capacity and at a high level, rather.
Okay, so we've got that working definition of a system going on. And you mentioned earlier that there are different types of systems and that whenever people come together, they create that system, whether it's church, whether it's family, whether it's work. We talk a lot about family systems at Unboxed to Lead and particularly how our family system impacts our leadership. But can you talk a little bit about the difference between the family system and the relationship system, specifically as it pertains to the workplace?
Yeah. So, you know, I want to be very clear that while church relationships are a relationship system and while workplace is a relationship system and all the other ones I talked about, education, fraternities, blah, 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 they are different than our family relationship systems. And they're different for a couple of reasons. Number one is because, first and foremost, our family is the one that teaches us how to function in relationships. So your family of origin is where you learned how human beings are supposed to manage relationships, et cetera. And so you're not learning how to manage relationships when you're at work or when you're at church. These are things that you've already learned within your family. So that's one of the major differences. Second of all, because as it relates to biological family, because when we come into this world, we're so dependent both emotionally as well as physically on our families, the level of intensity as it relates to emotions, blah, if I can get the words out, as it relates to just the emotional level of intensity between people within families is a lot different than the level of intensity between people who work together, who go to church together, et cetera. There's no dynamic like the family dynamic, whether it's adopted family or biological family. It's just the way that we have been programmed through nature.
I see. Yeah, because a lot of times when you think about the first thing you're taught when you go into a professional workplace setting, you're taught to be professional. You're expected to clearly not have the kinds of relationships that you would have with your brother or sister when you're trying to fight over space for the bathroom kind of situation, or trying to compete for the love of another parent or whatever it is, or whether it's contentious or whether it's extremely close. The relationships are expected to be different. They're expected to be quote unquote professional in the workplace. So you're not really kind of, I guess what I hear you saying is you're not generally expected to be who you are at home, who you are at work.
Exactly. And the irony is that many of the ways that we manage relationships at work, at church, within our, you know, school, whether we're the professor or the student, is very much informed by how we learn to manage relationships within our families. So you really get a sense of how that looks. It's just that we kind of tidy it up a little bit within the workplace. Well, at least we're supposed to. And then we've had a couple of high profile individuals that didn't understand the difference between the workplace and the marriage family relationship and mistook some of the people that they were working with for their spouses.
So you got some splaining to do. So I would imagine I'm following up on this. I know this is veering off on some of the direction we're going, but that would seem like quite a source of tension and stress. If you're used to dealing, where you've learned how to manage your relationships, be it in a positive or negative way, if you've learned that from your family system, and now you're in a workplace where you can't deal with a coworker the way you would deal perhaps with a parent or with a sibling or some other member of your extended family, that must be the source of a lot of anxiety. If you don't have the tools if the only tools you have are the tools that you use with your immediate family, because I guess what I'm saying, we tend to take a lot of shortcuts with our family.
We really do. And that's a very good, that's a very a great observation. But I want to just kind of add on to that, that while we may modify how it looks, when you pull away the veneer, you kind of notice that the way that we learn to function and to manage relationship difficulties within our family, we take those exact same strategies and techniques into all other relationships. So that's why it's so important to really work on our family to become, you know, stronger within our family relationships, because we actually do take it. It just looks different. Mm-hmm. And the level of intensity is different because, of course, we don't have the same emotional connection to our coworker that we have to our brother or sister, just because of years, because of the dependency that we have on one another within the family and a whole lot of other dynamics. But the way we manage things. So let's just say, for instance, one of the ways that I manage relationship difficulties within my family is by not speaking to family members. And we're going to get a little more into this in just a moment. So while I can't, you know, just not speak to my coworkers, what will happen is you will find individuals only speaking when absolutely necessary. So they're like, hey, you know what? I gotta stay here because I gotta eat. I can't afford to lose my job or whatever it may be. But you know, I don't want to be bothered with them, so I say just the bare minimum. You know, they don't go to Christmas parties and all that stuff. They've always got an excuse why they can't come. So while it looks a little different than what it does with families, you know, where the person just, you know, won't call family members or go visit them or anything like that, you still see the basic relationship patterns being replicated in all the various relationships that they are part of, relationship systems that they find themselves in. That's why once we understand how to manage relationships, we can translate that skill set into all other relationship systems, even though they're not identical.
Okay, so you've kind of answered it, but I'm going to ask the question anyway, because I think you have more to say on this. So why is it important for leaders then to embrace the concept of the relationship system and the workplace as a relationship system? I mean, you've answered a lot of that, but can you bring it home?
Yeah, because when you understand how systems work, how human relationships function, then when things start to go awry, you have a better sense of what's going on. You know, for instance, me, and I can't deal with these new cars, but and you remember when I was much younger, there wasn't a whole lot that I couldn't fix on an automobile.
Right.
The challenge that I had was I couldn't diagnose it. And I can't fix anything on these new cars, man. Everything is computerized.
Sure.
Special tools and stuff. But back in the day when you could just get a flathead, a Phillips, and some wrenches and go to town, I could fix anything on a car. But the challenge that I had was I didn't know how to diagnose what was wrong.
Right.
And so understanding systems, and that's why a good mechanic, when he understands the system and the functioning of the car, he can just listen to a little, drive it for a few blocks. He's listening and it's like, oh, this is what's going on with your car. And you're like, man, how did you know that? Because he understands the system of the automobile. And so that's why it's so important for leaders to understand how relationships function, how the relationship system, what we call relationship system functions, so that when things are going awry, they can diagnose and then can also begin to repair. And then also good diagnosis, like I said before, I had the ability to be able to work on the car myself if once I knew what was wrong with it. And so once someone tells you what's wrong, a lot of times we can begin to develop strategies, effective strategies to strengthen, repair, et cetera.
Okay. So, you know, we only have this is supposed to be a 30-minute broadcast. It usually turns into double that normally once we get to kind of talking. But if we were going to give somebody just the bare bones, a leader to get them started, the bare bones essentials of where to start about with regard to understanding the relationships, if you could think of three things or three steps, what were those three things that, like, the most important things to kind of get started to understand this relationship system?
It wouldn't even be three things. It would just really be just one thing. So
okay,
when we understand the purpose, if you will, or the functioning of a relationship system, that gets us so far. And I'm gonna tell you what that is. So for instance, what is the purpose of a clock? Because the difference, there's a difference between how a clock system works and how an automobile system works, even though they both have nuts and bolts and gears and pulleys and all that stuff in it, but they work totally different. And they have, because they have a different purpose. What is the purpose of relationships? What is the purpose of relationships with humans? And people are going to think that I'm crazy when I say this, but as we talk a little further, it's going to make perfect sense. The purpose of relationships is survival. That is the purpose of relationships, survival. And when effective leaders understand that the purpose and the function or function of relationships is survival, the relationship system is in place for survival.
Okay. All right. All right. Let's dive into that just a little bit. Give me an example. I'm assuming that this has some evolutionary roots, or maybe if you don't want to use that term, you say some early human roots in the sense of how we function as a system for survival before we found ourselves in the modern age. Talk about how is that still hardwired in us, this sense of survival? Is it as intense as it was 1,000 years ago, or is it, talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So again, the key purpose or functioning of a relationship system is survival. And I think everyone today, a Christian, and of course, you know, I am a Christian, and I was a Christian pastor for over 20 plus years. And I still believe in evolution. And so whether you believe that God created the world or whether you believe that the world came about as a result of evolution, we all agree that humans evolve. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the fact that we have automobiles and didn't have automobiles 2000 years ago shows that we evolve. We also see, you know, genetically, when we look at physical features and stuff, humans evolve, et cetera, et cetera. With that being said, one of the main purposes for relationships, however you look at it, is to preserve and to continue the human race. Mm-hmm. So individuals came into relationships for several reasons. Number one, to continue themselves. So a man and a woman come together for the purpose of creating another human being. I mean, we just break it down to its most fundamental state. A man and woman comes together to create another human being. Then human beings come together in order to protect each other. You know, that herd concept or herd mentality. We need to look out for and to protect each other from outside danger. And there's outside danger. The elements, you know, it's a lot easier to build shelter when three or four people are working together than for one man to have to chop the tree, measure, scrape, try to put up a whole house by themselves just using wood and an axe. So human beings came together to find protection from the elements, to find protection from wild animals, to find protection from other human beings. And so when you look at the relationship, there is a survival component, or rather the center of it is to preserve the human race and to provide survival and safety.
I'm RP Soriano, and I'm here with Dr. Robert Davis. You're listening to Unboxed, and we're talking about work relationship systems. We're discussing getting a better understanding of relationship systems, how they work, why they function, and you've just said that this is really all about survival. So the question I have, and I think I was trying to ask this question earlier and asked it the wrong way, what's the leader's role in the relationship system then?
Yeah, so the leader's role, number one, of course, is to understand how relationship systems function, to really do some reading and to do some observation, to be an observer. One of the things that my wife enjoys doing is what is called people watching. She enjoys just—
Oh, don't we all? Don't we all?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
You know, I never got into people watching. As much as I'm talking about this, I never really took up the thing about people watching, and I need to do that more. But my wife loves it. She loves just—
My wife and I love to go to restaurants, sit outside, and just watch, and just after we've had our conversation, we'll just sit there and watch. And I have to say, it's a guilty pleasure. We do a lot of judging. I have to admit it. I'm who we're fooling. We do a lot of judging. We do a lot of, you know, head shaking and eye rolling, which we probably should get out of. But
so maybe I do want people watching that I'm taking credit for, because
you probably do. Yeah, you probably do. Yeah. If you find
it that way.
That's right. If you find in your head that you're judging and shaking your head and looking at people wondering what are these strange beings doing, then you're people watching. That's the whole point. There's no other point for doing
it. No other point, man. So a leader, when a leader does that, when a leader is observational, when they're really trying, when they seek through research and study to understand how relationship systems function, when they do their best to understand what is going on within their system, and then when they try to create a culture, this is one of the things I really hope that we really dive into. When they try to create a culture to help people to understand that we're not in a life and death battle, because unlike our ancient ancestors, we are not in a day-to-day survival for our lives against the elements, against wild animals, and against other murdering tribes. And I'm going to put a little asterisk next to that, because for some reason, man, we just can't stop murdering each other. But that's a whole nother story for another day. But, sure. You know, we're really not in a day-to-day crunch. You know, our ancestors, man, they needed rain. They were always behind the eight ball because they, you know, it was a day-to-day survival. They didn't know when someone's going to ride in on a horse and just kill the whole village. And this was all over the world. You know, people didn't know what was going to happen the next day so far as nature was concerned, and was crops going to produce. You know, now we just go to the grocery store. Nobody knows how to garden. By the way, I have an awesome garden. But a leader... so that I don't get too bogged down telling how wonderful my garden is and the collard greens that are growing. But a leader has to be able to help the team to understand and to get to a place, and not through lecturing, but I'll talk about how this looks, but just to help to create an environment among the team members where people are not in full survival mode. And that's one of the things that unfortunately we do. We're too much in survival mode when we're not fighting for our survival. Mm. So we're acting like people needed to act when they were, you know, moving through the Serengeti, and you had no idea whether a lion was going to attack you, an elephant was going to stomp you into the ground or what. We're still living like that when we didn't know when some marauders were going to come and destroy our whole village. But we're still living like that, and we're not in that environment. We're in the most technological era of human history. And so a leader has to be able to help people to calm down, to understand that they don't have to be on the edge, that it's going to be okay, that they don't have to fight for their survival, etc.
It's interesting. Do you feel, and I just want to dive into that just for a quick second here. Do you feel that we've created this artificial environment? Look, business realities are business realities. You have to be competitive. You know, you have to be able to survive in business. However, there are always these analogies that are used, that we are fighting for survival. We've got to destroy the competition. Like, we use these words and we use these images to create this kind of fight for your life scenario. And it does seem to create that atmosphere in organizations that, you know, we've got deadlines, we've got, you know, this is either going to make us or break us. It's all or nothing. And we do have that very stressful type of, we've created that very stressful type of environment. Are you saying that there's no need for all of that, or that we don't need to, that our reaction is a little far more extreme than, as you said, you know, being surprised by a lion or a marauding village coming in to wipe everybody out?
Yeah, we have people who are actually at war right now. I mean, there are nations around the world where people are afraid for their day-to-day existence. They genuinely don't know when someone is going to roll up and blow their brains out and their entire family's brains out.
Right.
There are people who don't know where they're going to get their water from.
Right.
I mean, they don't know if they're going to die from dehydration. They don't know where their next meal, literally where their next meal is coming from. We have Navy SEALs that are just sent into some of the most trying circumstances, man, where they really just don't know if they're going to get blown up. And so we have to kind of tune down the rhetoric that tries to suggest that if, you know, fee-fi-fo-fum business goes out of business, that is akin to people who are worried that a missile may blow up their entire village tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
There's no comparison. And when we start to ratchet up that rhetoric, when we create that kind of environment, that culture, that atmosphere, if you will, within the workplace, it's really not healthy. It's not healthy for the emotional well-being. It's not healthy for the relationships that exist within the workplace. And so one of the purposes and one of the responsibilities, that's the word, one of the responsibilities of the leader is to help people to understand that what you're doing is important, but we're not going to die if we don't get this right. Because there are people who, if they don't get it right, they will die. The people who planned the assault on Osama bin Laden's compound, if they didn't get that right, they were going to die.
Right.
There's a world of a difference between rushing in on Osama bin Laden's compound and, missing your mark for your quarterlies, you know, your quarterly targets.
Yeah. Yeah. Got it. Got it. So what else? What is the other response? You essentially are saying that it's that a leader has to be intentional and to help their team have control over their own emotional reactivity. Clearly that starts with the leader. What about keeping contact we've talked about that in the past, about making sure that one of our responsibilities in fostering healthy relationships is keeping contact.
And I want to talk about contact, but if I can just back up, because there's something I wanted to share a moment ago that I didn't get a chance to share. And if I can just back up for one quick second, and I want to talk just a little bit about how survival tactics show up in relationship behaviors. And the reason I want to go back just for a second is because once we understand this, I think it will give a little more clarity about how the leader helps to create that calm in the workplace.
Okay.
And so I apologize that I didn't mention this.
No, that's all right.
I want to talk about how these survival tactics show up in relationship behaviors. There are three primary survival tactics: fight, flight, and seeking help. So you think about it: if a lion came charging at you, you're going to do one of three things. You're going to fight. You're going to run, which is flight. Or you're going to yell to the top of your lungs, help, help, somebody help me.
And I feel like I'd be doing probably all three of those.
Yeah. Oh, and some combination thereof. No, that's
yeah,
a very good
yeah,
point.
Yeah.
That's a very good point. And so when we talk about fight in relationships, that typically shows up as conflict. When we talk about flight, which is a human instinct relative to survival. It's not just humans, but throughout all of nature. We're talking about flight. We're talking about distancing and cutoff. Mm-hmm. And I really love just talking about it's in all of nature. I love watching those nature shows. And when you see a lion get scared, I mean, it is so funny to watch the king of the jungle when something spooks the lion. And he's like, oh, and he's looking around like, whoa, what was going on here? It's just hilarious. You're like, dude. Get yourself together, man. You're the king of the jungle out here, man.
Until I'm not, right?
Yeah, you are until you're not. So you have fight, which is often in relationships demonstrated through conflict. Flight, which is often demonstrated as distancing. I talked about that just a few moments ago. Or just cutting off from people. You know, here's the danger. Let me get as far away from what I perceive to be emotional danger. And then the third one is seeking help. And this is the good one. That's through gossiping. That's one of the things we talk about, triangling others into the relationship challenges. It's me going and saying to another person, man, what is wrong with Raphael? What do you mean, man? I mean, man, he's always on his phone. He's talking loud, man. I'm trying to go over there and work. And he's never, you know, pulling his weight because I'm seeing some difficulties in the relationship and I can't manage it, so I'm seeking help. So either I'm going to go and get into it with you, or I'm going to try my best to stay away from you. That's the flight. Or I'm going to try to seek help from someone else. And that's just a human response. That's just relationship patterns and relationship behaviors that we use as survival tactics. So when the leader understands that, hey, this is how people are trying to survive, it does so much. And if I can just say a couple of more things just on that, I'll make it very brief. When a leader understands that his or her team is trying to survive, it really helps them to realize that the person is not the problem. There's something going on in the relationship system. And it helps them to just kind of calm down when you can just say, you know what? This is just natural. This is nothing to freak out about. Even though it needs to be addressed, we're going to have to deal with it. I understand that I'm dealing with human beings, and this is how human beings manage and deal with relationships. It helps the leader to become calm when they understand that. So
I have to tell you, you're pulling back the curtain on this. I mean, I'm just gone and done a time warp and looked back at my entire career, and everything now makes sense.
Everything
makes sense. And thinking about the way that I have to deal with you and the team that I lead, now I'm understanding it's not you. And I feel much better about that. I thought it was you the whole time, and all my frustration.
My wife thought it was me. My kids thought it was me. Every coworker I've ever had thought it was me. I mean, people that I just bump into on the streets, they say, hey, Robert, it's you. But yeah. I am convinced.
Well, no, I mean, I think it is you. I do believe it is you. I think you are the exception. I'm definitely the exception. It is definitely me, and it is definitely you. Everybody else is probably just, you know, natural. You're right. They're probably in a system, but I think you and I seriously have some clinical, you know, it's like Jerry Seinfeld told George, you need help, like professional help. You need to be like in a room diagnosed.
With a team of professionals, a psychiatrist sitting around you, man.
All right. Okay. So this is great. But this is great. I mean, you really are lifting back the curtain on this. So go ahead, continue. I'm sorry.
No. But yes, that is so true. But oftentimes, just to kind of follow up on the joke, oftentimes what happens is we look at people and the person becomes the problem rather than understanding that this person is trying to survive. And unfortunately, they don't realize that they don't have to fight so hard, or they don't have to run so hard, or they don't have to yell for help so loud, because it's really not a life and death situation. Mm-hmm. And when the leader can bring that type of calm within themselves by saying, you know what, Jim or Jan is not my enemy. They're not, I don't need to destroy them. I don't need to, you know, teach them a lesson. What I need to do is I need to create an environment that brings down the temperature for everyone.
All right, so let's talk about. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm listening.
No, I was going to say. Well, let's talk about that. Can we dive into that a little bit? Like, what's the environment that the leader can create to kind of help mitigate the team operating in survival mode?
Yeah, and that's it. The role of the leader is to create an environment where people can realize that they are not involved in a life or death battle for their lives or for scarce resources. And effective leadership accomplishes this in three ways. Number one, effective leaders are intentional to have control over their own emotional reactivity. Mm-hmm. And I guess I should be number two, because the first thing I said was effective leaders really do seek to understand how systems work. Number two, effective leaders are cognizant of the fact that this is not a life and death battle, and they do their best to try to help others to understand that. So I guess this would be actually number three. Effective leaders are intentional to have control over their own emotional reactivity, to say, you know what, again, this is not the end of the world. It's not like that song, Hold My Hand, It's the End of the World. You know, no, this is not the end of the world. Number four, whatever number I'm at now, effective leaders establish relationships and remain in contact with the various factions in the organization. So effective leaders realizing how people, unfortunately, too often in relationships view things from a survival perspective. They recognize that if their calm is going to rub off on others, and it does, your calm will rub off on others. And so they recognize if my calm is going to rub off on others, then I have to be in contact with others. So it's kind of like the opposite of the, you know, the huge global pandemic we just came out of, where the goal was to get away from others because you didn't want to spread disease. You do want to spread this. You want to spread your calm. And that calm is spread by being in contact with people. But flip thing, leaders, flip of that is, if you are highly anxious and scared, reactive, in survival mode, that rubs off as well. But if you can remain calm, that's what a leader does. A leader says, I'm going to remain calm. And in order for me to help bring calm to others, I need to stay in contact with them. And are you ready for this? Are you ready for this? Because I'm going to blow your mind with this, Raphael.
I'm ready.
Hold on to your seats. It is best to remain in contact in a calm way for you to be calm and in contact with the most emotional and reactive person in your organization. Man, that's the one that you need to be in contact with, because that's the one that your influence can assist the most. Now, we can't change people, but we can influence people through our presence, through the power.
I'm imagining there are some people out there. I'm one of them. And so, especially some people who tend to be a little more introverted, that sounds absolutely exhausting to. I mean, you said that there are four, what do you say, three ways that we react: fight, flight, asking for help. I'm going to add one more, and that is playing possum. Because I would imagine for some people, dealing with the most emotional person at work or in their family, they just would rather just lie down and play dead out of just sheer exhaustion.
Well, it's hope
that the person takes a couple of sniffs and walk away.
Isn't that the same as distancing and cutoff? I mean, that's, you know, the possum uses that technique.
Well, yes, it's the same. Yeah, it's the same as distancing and cutoff, but it's a different kind of emotional reaction in the sense that I am too exhausted to even deal with this. I'm shutting down in the sense that I just don't have the energy to deal with it. And I don't know where I'm going to get the energy to do it. I'm not even going to run away from this. I'm just completely unplug.
And so let me clear up a misconception that individuals have. A misconception that individuals have is that an introvert would have more of a difficult time remaining in contact with highly anxious individuals, because by nature they're introverts. I want to flip that around and say extroverts also have a difficult time, because oftentimes extroverts relying on their charisma.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I think this may have been a little bit delay here, so I'm going to go on just a little bit more. But unfortunately, in some cases, extroverts can cause damage because they rely on their charisma, rely on their interpersonal skills and their, you know, their swag and sway, without doing the heavy lifting of making sure that they're thoughtful, that they're strategic, that they're coming across in a calm, collected way. So whether you're introvert or extrovert, the work of preparation to show up in highly anxious situations as calm and collected as can be is just as much work for either one of them. Effective, you know, in someone who's in a gifted speaker, they have to do just as much preparation and studying if they want to effectively speak as someone who is not as comfortable being up there on the stage, because the content is just as important in both situations.
So, I mean, look, relationship systems, these are complex, a lot of moving parts. I would imagine that there is a lot of temptation to try to just, you know, find a quick fix for this. I mean, we live in the society of now, right? So that's kind of how we are programmed these days. So how does a leader get around this feel or this urge? Because you've talked about this, right? We're in survival mode. And so I would imagine survival mode puts you in that, you got to fix this now or the lion's going to have you for lunch.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that an effective leader does. That's number five. I lost count of the numbers. I apologize. Let's just call it five. Number five would be effective leaders understand that we're talking about thousands upon thousands of generations that are influencing how we function. And so we're not going to change all of that in just a matter of, you know, one meeting or one setting. So rather than pushing for rapid, quick fix change, or leaders looking for their own narrow self-interest, there's this understanding that we're in this for the long game. Because another thing that really rises the level of anxiety and really is counterproductive as it relates to creating a healthy workplace culture is when the leader tries to use and manipulate people for their own self-interest, and they do it under the guise of trying to create a healthy workplace culture, people can really see through your phoniness. So that's why it's so important for the leader to first become clear with his or herself, and then for the leader to try to show up in the best light possible. Because if your thing is, you know, I need for my team to be as calm and to be as productive as possible so that I can get to the next stop on this train of my own professional career, people are going to sense the jive. They're going to sense the jive, man. Real knows real, and fake knows when they, and real knows fake as well. So they're going to catch up. They're just going to catch up with you. So, effective leaders, you know, try to remain in contact with people, not so that they can manipulate them, but because they understand if I can allow my calm, less anxious presence to be experienced by others on the team, it really will lower the temperature. When people realize, man, that this is not just some new strategy that the leader is using because they read another book or they attended another seminar, but this is actually who the leader is at their inner core, they're more thoughtful, more intentional, more focused on having healthy relationships themselves, man, it changes everything. And on that note, that's why it's so important to go where the phoniness doesn't pay off in financial ways. And that is to work at our family, with our families of origin, to be intentional about working within our marital relationships, with our children, with our parents, with our siblings, aunts, uncles, cousins, et cetera, you know, in those relationships where, you know, it's for the purpose of just having a healthy relationship. Doing those reps in that environment, man, makes you unstoppable when you show up at work.
Wow, that is a great connection. One that I think a lot of people, including myself, it's difficult to make that connection. And I think you've done an incredible job of connecting why our family relationships inform so much of how we operate in our workplace relationships. And the work that needs to go into making both of those areas healthier and, make them healthier. And I think a lot of the times that we don't point out or we're not clear enough is that this is really about happiness and contentment, right? And being happier in your life. Like this isn't just for the sake of, you know, just for doing it. This is really finding a way of reducing anxiety and becoming just a happier and healthier person.
Yes. That is
all right.
That,
so
That's hitting the, you hit the nail. I have to just say you hit the nail on the head with that one.
Okay. All right. Listen, I think that we've pretty much covered it all on this topic. Not covered at all, but I think this kind of brings us to an end here. But before we close out, you know, we do these shows and they are you know, they're kind of, you know, we record them and then we post them later. So a lot of the things that we're doing, we really can't talk about because by the time someone listens to it, it's already happened. But we do have some webinars that will be coming up, or that by the time you listen to this, have already been, we would have already finished. That's why we say it's important to visit our website to sign up for our newsletter so you can get them. But the webinar that we have coming up next, or like I said, will be in the past, is imposter syndrome. And I'm excited about that. And I've talked to a couple of colleagues and people in my network about this. And this seems to be I'm excited to be a part of it. I mean, this is a real issue. Can you just give us just a little 30-second piece about what you're going to be talking about? And then if someone hears this, you know, they can go back and check it out on our website.
Yeah, please make sure you visit the website. And when we talk about imposter syndrome, unfortunately, the more we move up in organization, up the ladder in organizational leadership, too often there is this sense that I don't belong, that I'm really, you know, that pretty soon I'm going to get caught and I'm going to be exposed for who I am. I wrestled with this for years. I used to have a recurring dream and I didn't know what it was about. And then I found out it was, you know, one of my struggles with imposter syndrome, which would manifest itself as I would be speaking in a big auditorium and I just couldn't get my notes together. And I was just fumbling and bumbling, and everyone realized this guy doesn't have a clue what he's talking about. He was never a gifted speaker. This was all just a big facade. Now we know who he really is. He really is a fumbling, bumbling buffoon. And that thing haunted me. And unfortunately, a lot of times leaders struggle with that. And how does a leader, this is what we really want to help leaders to come to grips with, how does a leader come to grips with the fact that they are competent and capable to lead their organizations and to live a fulfilled life? So if this broadcast, of course, is airing after the webinar, so go to our website and register so that you can see the replay of that webinar. I believe it's going to change a lot of leaders' lives.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. And I think I totally agree with you as well. So excited about that and looking forward to more great things. This has been an incredible discussion. I have to say that I have, like I said, you pulled back the curtain on a lot of, you know, behavior and the way the workplace systems operate and why it's important for a leader to know that and the skills that leaders can develop to be able to improve their workplace systems and create a more healthier, happy workplace culture, which is what we're all about. And so I want to say thank you to Dr. Robert Davis and thank you to everyone who has joined us for our broadcast here. We want to remind everyone to visit us online at www.unboxedtolead.com. And that concludes our show. And we look forward to seeing you again on Unboxed.
Unboxed provides a full-service leaders peer support community that helps high-level leaders become more authentic leaders who build healthy workplace cultures and reach their personal life goals. To learn more and discover how we can take your leadership and your life to the next level, please visit our website at unboxedtolead.com. That's unboxed, the number 2, lead.com. Again, that's unboxed, the number 2, to lead.com.